Hello, everyone. Welcome to Acerta's first web chat, answering your questions about machine learning and Industry 4.0. I'm your host, Ian Wright, Marketing Manager at Acerta, and I'm joined today by two of our resident experts, Acerta CTO, Jean-Christophe Petkovic, and Solutions Engineer, Nathan Lai. Now, this is a relatively short session, just 30 minutes, but I think we'll be able to cover a lot of interesting ground in that time. I want to thank everybody who submitted questions in advance. We've pulled the most interesting ones together to form the basis of this discussion. But I also want to encourage the audience to post any questions that might come up as Nathan and JC are talking in the chat. I'll do my best to bring them up organically as we go. Now, let's just start with some brief introductions before we dive in. JC, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. Yeah. I guess at this point, I've spent the majority, not the majority, but pretty close to the majority of my life analyzing data. And I'd say for the past 10 years, at least, analyzing data coming from embedded systems, and more recently, founding Acerta. I'm the CTO and a co-founder. Basically, my experience is almost entirely in automotive as well. I haven't worked a job that hasn't been automotive. So yeah, that's kind of where my experience is.
And Nathan?
So yeah, my name is Nathan Lai, solutions engineer. So at Acerta, I help integrate and manage and onboard our Acerta platform with our different clients and help maintain our various deployments. But before Acerta, I worked primarily in the tier one powertrain space as a manufacturing engineer, process engineer, program manager, and up into more operations and management towards the end. Interested to see, and hopefully we can clarify some of the questions that might be asked here and how machine learning can be a solution for some of your own applications and your own operations.
All right, great. Thanks, guys. You're clearly in good hands here, folks. So let's get started. So we saw a number of variations on this question. Sometimes it was framed more negatively, asking, you know, why so many AI projects fail. I prefer this more sort of optimistic version. How do you ensure success with a machine learning project? Nathan, JC, your thoughts?
Maybe JC, I'll start with this one, just what I've seen. So I'd say it really depends on the level of adoption of machine learning and maybe analytics in general at your own, in your own facility or facilities. I'd say in our most successful places where, you know, there's a lot of maturity within the plant in terms of adoption of, you know, Industry 4.0 and the IoT applications in general, you can easily skip into some of our more mature, I guess, offerings that machine learning can do. So some of the more, let's say, decision point deployments that we do that are, you know, very heavy or very niche in companies where the maturity level is high, the success of these projects typically lands well. So what I mean by that is, I think in companies where the success or, you know, the outcome or maybe the adoption of Industry 4.0 is a little bit lighter, I think to ensure success, you want to make sure you have some small wins. So maybe starting small, maybe not on very broad, very niche projects, but on more subtle projects that can help the day-to-day engineer do their job maybe a little bit better, you know, increase their speed of root cause, give them more visibility into their data and offload some of the, let's just say, data engineering work that a lot of them now have to do when they do their root cause. So I'd say in general to ensure, yeah, success of a machine learning project, I'd say really you have to look at your company's adoption level. You know, how willing are they to push the boundaries, or, you know, do they have funding to push the boundaries? And if not, then making sure you start small in something that you can get quick wins, something that you can advertise and internally sell within your company to make sure that it is something that can be, you know, advertised well as to grow out. And then from there, scale out into solutions that are a little bit more niche, maybe a little bit more involved and invasive to ensure that they have the buy-in from management and the facility in general.
Yeah, and maybe just to add to that from the machine learning side, just kind of how to think about this. I like to think about these kinds of problems in terms of input and output. So the output here needs to be very clearly defined. Like, we need to know, what is our goal with this project? How do we define success? What necessary integrations do we need to have? Like, what systems are we going to hook up to? And then in terms of the input, we need to make sure that the data we're collecting has actually got the information content necessary to solve that particular problem. We need to make sure that data has some level of fidelity. And most importantly, and this one is a little bit more rare, we need the data also to be traceable. So we need traceability for individual chunks of data. So like, if we got this measurement of pressure, what unit or what part actually generated that pressure from what operation and at what time? That's the level of traceability that we need for information in order to produce a meaningful result. And then as Nathan mentioned, just to mirror what he said, like it's also about the people involved, who you get involved, how getting their buy-in and what level of maturity the organization is at, so that you can choose the appropriate size of project. Like maybe you go for an observational deployment, so where you're not actually actively affecting the line, like the stakes are a lot lower, right? Your success is more or less guaranteed at that point. Basically, you're just interested in, is something happening on my line? Like, did something drift in our line? That's kind of a good low-hanging fruit to start with.
Yeah, and maybe just build further. Like, if we think about, you know, even for implementing technologies that are not machine learning, okay? Like, maybe, you know, for the folks here that work on, they have worked on an assembly line, like, think about even implementing a new technology and the amount of people you have to convince even within your own groups to do this, like the maintenance folks, the operations folks. So even if you have a new technology, like a vision system that you want to implement, like think about the lift just to get it validated and then implemented. And, you know, from that perspective, machine learning project is really no different, right? Like you do have to get that buy-in. You do have to make sure that it's validated. So, you know, JC brings a very important point about being clear about what success even looks like. What are you guys looking to get out of this project? Being very clear from the start what that is and making sure it's appetizable for your own internal, you know, facility. Like how well will that be adopted? And like JC said, you know, from a Certa standpoint, we have a couple of different offerings and deployments that can fit into wherever your facility is at. So whether it's something smaller like observational, where you can get the quick wins to build that kind of trust into the technology, because it is new, right? And that is a reality. It is new and it is novel, but to build that trust is very important. And that's where Certa has different, you know, deployment options for that before moving on to something that's, yeah, again, like more invasive, that would require something like downtime, trials on the line to prove out that application, right? Without that underlying support of trust, you know, success is hard to achieve, right? So making sure that, again, that adoption level is there within the plant and building that use case or building that case that you can sell internally within your facility.
Can you guys give is maybe an example of what a quick win would look like, or what a quick win would be in the case of machine learning?
Yeah, sure. So I would say something like, you know, one of our you know, even in terms of the Certa offering, so some of our I'll call them lower barrier entry options really just monitor, right? So the models aren't specific to solving a particular problem, but what they look to do is monitor how things are different. So, you know, something like a quick win would be, hey, something as simple as somebody miscalibrated a gauge, which might cause some, you know, increased scrap rate down the line. That's, you know, takes 3 days to troubleshoot because the scrap rate increases, people are kind of running around trying to figure out what's going on. But then, you know, our technology and offering would flag that within hours of it happening, right? So that'd be like a nice quick win. And that's something that, you know, we've seen across the board on some of our clients that use that offering, and they're able to, you know, get ahead of issues, right? And say, hey, look, if we didn't have this technology, we would have gone through the traditional way of a forensics exercise and tried to troubleshoot. And then we would have lost, you know, 2-3 days. But instead we were able to get in front of that, right? So wins like that can demonstrate how powerful it is, even in a simple solution, and help expand and expand the applications and maybe even by doing so, educate themselves in what machine learning can do. So that would be maybe one example there.
Yeah. And I think it's important to plan for those quick wins, and have an understanding end to end what that solution is going to look like too. There's this pattern that you see sometimes with machine learning initiatives where it'll end up in somebody's Jupyter notebook somewhere, but never actually hit production. So like when you're planning out this initiative, if you want this to be successful, you need to have a pretty clear picture of what the end goal is. Otherwise you're going to get trapped. Like you're going to get stuck with a Jupyter notebook at the output, and you might not necessarily be able to integrate that with any of your systems. So you need to plan out where is this going to run? Like where am I going to get my data from? Where is it going to be stored? How do I update my models over time too? Like how do I plan for change? Because change will happen. Manufacturing processes wander. They don't stay within a defined channel. So how do I adapt to that change? All of those things are other kind of like side threats that could potentially affect the success of a machine learning initiative or project.
Okay, great. Now, another frequently asked question, and I think we can assume that this is maybe also about starting new projects with machine learning. What barriers or risks do you typically see?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the barriers from the machine learning perspective are about data. It's really about, I would say the most common one is traceability. As I mentioned before, really it's just without the ability to identify the source of a particular piece of information, it's very difficult to reconstruct what took place when that data was collected. And that's important for any kind of analytics. It doesn't matter whether or not it's machine learning or like some fancier version of SPC, or if it's just some basic charting. Like you need to be able to identify the source of that data so you can merge, join, pivot, do whatever it is that you need to do to reconstruct that picture.
Yeah, and I think building on what JC's saying, the typical barriers I see is in some cases just a hardware barrier, right? So, you know, typically on a lot of our deployments, you do need some kind of outbound connection. So right away, if that doesn't exist, then that's a little bit of an issue that we have to overcome. And then just mirroring JC's point in terms of the data, let's just say integrity, right? Like, does the data you actually collect have the information relevant for what we're looking to solve in particular? In terms of risks, the more advanced or invasive the application or machine learning application, the more risk there are. But again, I think a lot of that can be mitigated by making sure you do something that matches the adoption level of your plant and what, let's just say, the appetite is for even trying something like machine learning, right? So, you know, risks, when we see risks, I typically see it would be, again, how well you integrate, how well, again, for the more invasive deployments, you know, are there downsides of even implementing it? For instance, from the infrastructure perspective, can you handle all the different corner cases to make sure that, you know, the application or, you know, decision point applications that you can handle the corner cases so that, you know, when something does happen or if there's an issue, that they're handled properly so people aren't maybe attacking the deployment solution itself or the machine learning application itself, but maybe the deployment itself, right? So in those cases, the barriers are higher and the risks are higher, and our application from the machine learning side has to be able to accommodate all those corner cases and exception handling that's maybe outside even the machine learning deployments. Because, you know, from a machine learning perspective, if the data has the information, then there are solutions that will solve the problem. But again, once we start talking about those more niche deployments that do make decision points, then the risks become, let's just say, higher, just because the requirement for a production system is quite high. Like, again, going back to what even the expectation for is of incumbent technology, it has to work all the time, right? Like there's definitely a philosophy, you know, on the assembly line, it's just keep it simple. Like, you must keep it simple, right? And machine learning is not necessarily always simple, but it needs to be able to handle those different complexities to make sure that it is a production viable technology, right? Again, going back to, yeah, what the barrier is even for incumbent technology, it's high, and similarly for machine learning. So when we go and we think about the more niche applications, we have to look and make sure that we cover those and that expectation is built into what we look to deploy out. So even when we talk about our machine learning applications that we do that are decision point, how they deal with issues where there's not enough data, network problems, all that kind of stuff, right? Those also have to be built in into the solution that honestly have nothing to do with machine learning. But to make machine learning a success, the solution has to encompass those kinds of things.
Yeah, 100%, Nathan. Like, one of the things you have to consider when in a machine learning deployment is what happens if my edge device gets hit with a forklift, because that's a very realistic scenario. Like, you could lose your compute because of physical damage. And you need to plan for that. It's those kinds of like left field kind of problems that are going to happen when you have a solution like this in play.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, shifting gears a little bit, this next question is much more on the technical side. So the question is, how do you deal with retraining?
It's a great question. So I think we're all generally aware in the manufacturing industry that nothing is 100% repeatable. Like the process that we set up to build something is going to shift. As I said, like it's not going to stay within a particular channel. And that has implications. There's a variety of things that could change. Like if you change steel suppliers, the weather could affect your process. Maybe you need to replace bits on a regular basis, and that's going to change some of the data that you collect. There's a whole variety of things that are going to change as a manufacturing line evolves over time. And for a model, especially a finely tuned one that's maybe making part or decision point recommendations, that's something that you want to deal with in a very systematic way. You want to detect when any substantial change takes place in your input data, because that indicates some kind of substantial changes been made to the manufacturing line. So this could be the appearance of new signals or the disappearance of signals that you've come to expect. They could completely change their characteristics. They could even start to see some sort of damage. Maybe a sensor isn't always responding. So all of these things you need to handle by regularly updating the model. The model needs to adapt to maybe not having 100% of the information available at all times. Maybe it needs to adapt to these new signals that are available that might add some extra information. Maybe it needs to adapt to a new signals regime. Maybe the mean and standard deviation has changed, and that means we need to handle it differently. So I guess to your question, like, how do you deal with retraining? Like, what is it that we do to deal with retraining? You want to establish a set of triggers for when you decide to retrain, and set up a system for automatically retraining that model, and then benchmarking it against a reasonable set of data for measuring against some kind of KPI for that model, and then make a decision based off that KPI whether or not that new version hits the edge device. I'd say that captures the majority of it. Is there anything that you'd add there, Nathan? Or
yeah, I'd say just in general, just being aware of it. So even from a deployment perspective, when we look to deploy a lot of solutions that require retraining. So again, when we're talking about instances where we have very specific models for specific use cases, you know, when we look at a deployment, we know our job's not done when we deploy with the first model. Right. And knowing that, and we have the framework in behind that to make sure, like JC said, that, and this is something we have to work with our clients in terms of establishing what that KPI is and how we're going to measure the performance. And again, this goes back to the how do we set up ourselves for success? Right. It's making sure that we work with the customer in a joint fashion, that it is a collaboration, especially in these very niche applications, because we're not the expert on the product or the process. Right. Like as much as I've worked in the automotive industry, like there's a lot of things that I haven't seen over time. And we have to make sure that these KPIs and these performance metrics are something that we can work on and agree on and build on and make sure that we can build our triggers properly to have that framework so that we can, you know, update models or see when they're starting to degrade. But from our perspective and a service perspective, it's just simply that we know we will have to do the retraining. So even after the model deployment is done, instantly we shift into the focus of, okay, how do we maintain and how do we properly assess and working with our clients to make sure that they're comfortable with the performance metrics and they understand what that process is behind that framework. And they have a channel to us to feedback and visibility into how that model is performing and making sure that, yes, we have those performance metrics in place so that we can make sure we set our triggers properly for our retraining exercise and push down and update as required to make sure that we constantly maintain that performance, because we know what's going to happen. We absolutely know what's going to happen. And then working with the client to understand what that cadence is. Is it something that we have to do over the course of months, a month, a week? And of course, that's something that we have to analyze over time. But we build into our framework to make sure that we can support that need, because we know it is a need.
Okay, great. Now, I think I jumped the gun a little here on the slide. Our last submitted question, I think, is also the most open-ended. So it seems like a good one to kind of close the discussion off with. Where do you think AI tech is headed? And I think maybe let's assume that we're talking about a manufacturing context here. I mean, pretty obviously we won't get into like Terminators or anything else right now.
Yeah. So I think It's kind of an interesting question because manufacturers are in a bunch of different states depending on their level of maturity of their digitalization process or like how hard they're trying to hit Industry 4.0. So in a way, there's you can kind of look ahead and see kind of what the future looks like by looking at your competitors if you're, say, at a less mature stage of Industry 4.0. So you might see a manufacturer collecting highly detailed levels of information and using that to inform their process in a very active way, affecting decision points, optimizing processes that maybe previously would use a kind of PID controller style process. Maybe you can actually use machine learning to further enhance that. But there's also other applications like using cameras and images to take finer measurements or more detailed analysis of parts as they move through. If you're using them for calculating a variety of different metrics, you can also reuse that information for other purposes. That's another thing that I see. I also see people heading in the direction of using things like reinforcement learning to help train robots on the line and have them become more efficient over time. That's another pattern that I see taking place. I think generally, as more information becomes available, we're realizing just how valuable that information is for optimizing, enhancing, or transforming a manufacturing process. And I'm excited to see what the future holds. I don't know what you have to say about that, Nathan.
Yeah, I think in general, I see AI tech, I guess this is a pretty broad question. So I'd say I see it, you know, making its way into a lot of different applications. And in some ways where we might not even, you know, you might not even know. And I think it's important that, you know, there are good AI applications that will make, you know, manufacturers more competitive. And that's why I do see that the general adoption will increase. And I'll give you guys an example. Like, you know, just talking with a European car manufacturer, some of the stuff they've done with, you know, using AI to help, you know, more dynamic scheduling of their body in white application, right? And how they can reschedule and make sure they deal with any kind of downtime or any kind of changes, right? Because that's a complicated operation to manage. So, you know, and operations are, like a machining operation is complicated. So all of a sudden you have this technology that can help with a lot of these decision making. And it's almost foolish to think that, like, why not? Like, why not entertain it? So I, you know, in a lot of applications, like you can even see when JC mentions, like, in, you know, better image detection, better root cause analysis, more, you know, predictive maintenance, you know, health check monitoring, even something as simple as, you know, monitoring different components or signals and monitoring drift. You can just see it being more and more invasive. So I feel like at some level, it's going to, you know, put its foothold within different corporations. And I feel, you know, if we're looking at some of even what we've seen, some of the competitive advantage within, you know, our own clients relative to, you know, the industry base, you can see how they're using it and adopting it to make themselves better. You know, they're, you know, with the onset of a lot of the data that's coming through, you know, the methods to deal with it are still quite traditional, right? We're still using Excel sheets. We're still looking at it retroactively. You know, we're still, yeah, looking at trending stuff on Excel to see if we can find trends. And there's a whole technology that deals with this for you, right? And it will make you can, it has definitely applications to make you better. And going back to that you know, vehicle assembly example, it's, you know, they are better for it, right? They do reduce those instances, right? If we think about what the expectation is for, you know, a vehicle manufacturer, every minute you don't make a car, like, think about how much money that is. Right. So if you can get an AI solution that will work for you, that can prevent, you know, even one vehicle from being, you know, from downtime or something like that, that's tremendous. Right. We know the margins are relatively slim when it comes to manufacturing lines. And again, you're collecting all of this data. We can see the change in the landscape and people adopting, you know, collecting tons and tons of data. Why not use it? Right. Why not use it? There's definitely technology. And like JC said, there's a wide variety of different ranges from low-hanging fruit, like the easy wins, like just monitor your signals. Just have something ping somebody when it's like, hey, this is different. Go check it out, right? Like, your press is starting to drift. You should maybe go check it out. Make sure, you know, everything's all square and the RAM's working properly. You know, all the way to decision point applications that can help you reduce scrap, and then all the way to, you know, maybe some scheduling applications, vision applications. There's tons of applications, and it'd almost be foolish to not think and not try to adopt some of this technology. because you have the data. So you're sitting on this data, you paid for that data, you're paid for collecting that data, you know, but you're dealing with it probably in a still a traditional way. So I think in that, you know, in that vein, I think AI technology is heading in a way where, you know, it's not to say that it's a need, but it's something that can definitely help you be more competitive.
Okay, great. We've got a little bit of time left for extra questions from the audience. One that's come up here, any recommendations for data storage?
That's a great question. I think one of the lessons learned over the course of industrialized data analytics over the past, I guess, 5 or 6 years is that I think starting with a data lake of some sort as the first point of truth or the first like system of record for your data is probably the best thing to do. However, I think some of the things that have kind of been learned since then, rather than just store everything, is at least have some base level of structure, like broad buckets where you want to put things. And also a litmus test for that data that makes it in there is that it's still traceable. So yes, maybe you can shift away from building these structured databases and store things in a very structured way and migrate towards more like ETL process management, like extract, transform, load kind of process management and kind of maintain those data pipelines rather than worry too much about databases. That's kind of been a shift that's happened relatively recently. I think that's some wisdom that we can follow and recommend. But I guess maybe the question is also about technology, like what technology should I be using? So specific recommendations, look towards different either managed databases from your cloud provider or also these data lake solutions like S3 on AWS or blob storage from Azure and similar. Like those are the kinds of solutions that you want to look towards for your storing your base, like large body of data. Hopefully that answers the question. I don't know, Nathan, if you want to tackle that as well.
Yeah, I think, I guess as long as, I guess for me, maybe this is a selfish answer. The more structured it is, I guess, or the easier it is for me to integrate with you is probably what I would suggest. So yeah, but like, you know, if it is like a, you know, a relational database, it just makes, you know, my life a lot easier. But that's not definitely not the requirement. You can definitely offload a lot of that onto us if it's just stored in a data lake, and you know we can help, you know, ease that ETL workload if required. So yeah, like as long as it's being stored somewhere. But some specific recommendations, especially if you're starting out, I'd say. And again, I don't know what the investment level is for where the question's coming from. But you know, for us, if we think about if you're truly believing you want to scale out, you know, your AI solution, then thinking about an MES provider, because of that framework they do provide that goes on top of just collecting data, right? But, you know, again, like, you know, we can integrate with a homegrown database as well, as long as there's an outbound connection. That's not something outside our purview. But again, if I were to make a very selfish recommendation, you know, I would recommend something like an MES system. Or just an MES, yeah, where there is, you know, that scalability factor, especially if you're going to work down different routes, like more some of the more niche applications, like decision points that you're going to be looking for or expecting to be doing things where the, you know, ML application does interact with your assembly line. Having that layer definitely is beneficial. But from a data perspective, again, it's really, yeah, like as long as it's relatively structured and traceable, I think that's really the basis, like the, you know, the lowest barrier to knock down in terms of having something to do for machine learning, right? So as long as we can structure, we can understand, and we can build a that traceability for the units moving through your manufacturing process, then we're good to go.
All right, great. Well, we're pretty much out of time. So I want to thank JC and Nathan for their participation. Also, thanks to the audience for your attendance and your interest. If you happen to come in late, don't worry. We'll be making a recording of this web chat available on the Acerta website very soon. So thanks again, everyone, and take care.